Our speaker today is going to be our own D19DR, Seeklai. And Seeklai is a grateful member of Al-Anon, and she's completing her third year as district rep for District 19. So at this time, let's welcome Seeklai. Seeklai, you there?
I'm here.
Hi. Morning.
Here I am. Of course, like the hottest mess as usual, like at the district meetings, you know, always running at the very end, just trying to get it in. So, well, hi everyone. Those of you who know, I have ADHD, so I typed out my message today because I wanted to make sure that I stayed on track. So I'm going to go ahead and let's see. Do you guys see when I'm looking at my webcam? Do you see me looking right at you?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Because like, I don't know.
I'm going to give you a 5-minute notice when you have 5 minutes left.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay.
So the reason I asked is because I'll be looking down sometimes at my notes that I typed up for you so that I don't go on and on and on. All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. I'm so excited. As Kathy and Carlotta mentioned, I am an absolute proud member of Al-Anon. I don't even, honest, like anybody who worked closely with me, anybody who knows me, anybody who met me when I first got here, wow, what a life I would have if not for Al-Anon. So I'm so grateful for the faces here, for all my friends who are here to support this event. And I can't wait to see more people in the future, like what else the special events team is going to do for the remainder of the term. And well, let's get right to it. Thank you very much. I know on a Sunday afternoon when it's 111 degrees in Fresno, I know you'd rather be outside, but you've chosen to be with me. So thank you so, so much. All right. And the other reason I typed this up is because everybody knows I like to be all over the place and joke a lot. So I thought, you know, there might be some people who really need to hear a message and don't just need to hear my little stand-up humor all the time. So I'm going to type something good. Plus, my mom's supposed to be on the call on my knee. So, you know, I got to like look good for the family. All right, here we go. Today's topic is expectations. So I'm going to go ahead and begin reading my little stuff. Hello, my name is Seeklai. I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of the Al-Anon Family Groups. In a few weeks, I will be celebrating my recovery anniversary, and truly, I know I only got here living one moment at a time. A few special thanks before I begin. I would like to thank God, who is my strength, my rock, and my guiding light. My mother, Rose, for always being there and showing me the meaning of unconditional love. My sister, Amber, for her devoted love. My sponsors of my whole program, all of them from beginning to now, who have helped me feel that I am okay after all and that life can get better. And finally, my dear friend, Mary O, who I've had the privilege of working side by side in service for the last 2.5 years, and she's become one of my very good friends. She's one of the greatest listeners of my pains and my progress, and she's always cheering me on the sidelines. I hope that each of you here today will take something that I shared and hold on to it. I have learned that this is a journey of many gems. When we are willing, we can collect many of them. To protect the anonymity of my family members, I will use aliases for the characters named in today's share. Any of you guys who know me already probably can guess who they are, but you know, just in the spirit of anonymity, guys, work with me. Okay, so the first reading I've decided to open up here is from Hope for Today. If you have your book, you can follow along with me on page 106. April 15th. My Al-Anon sponsor once suggested I detach from my problem and attach instead to my higher power. Until I practiced step 3 and turned my will and life over to God's care, detaching was more like constructing a wall of protection from fear and threat of harm. Before I seriously practiced meditation and prayer with step 11, asking only for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out, detaching was an exercise in futility. Today, detachment is different for me. It's an opportunity to make a choice. I can focus on the problem or I can attach to my higher power and see what is before me with fresh new eyes and thoughts. I am learning to detach from old reactions that interfere with my serenity, old fears that feed into expectations and judgments, and the part of me that diverts me from my primary spiritual aim. I am learning to attach the loving God I found in Al-Anon, the tools and principles of the Al-Anon program, new friends, and a sponsor who shares experience, strength, and hope with me. Thought for the day. My belief in reliance upon a higher power and the Al-Anon program helped me choose to be happy. Today, I choose a serenity that comes from attaching to God. And the quote is, I have made some choices that help allow me to live more sanely. And that's from In All Our Affairs, page 178. Well, everybody knows that I used to joke that if it weren't for this program, I would definitely be in Chowchilla State Prison. So we know that this is a program that has helped me to just calm down. I mean, genetically, I had a paternal grandfather who like had a real temper problem, and everybody says that I'm Grandpa Junior. So I'm really serious when I tell you guys that I really, really am grateful for this program for helping me to give me choices. Different choices. So this reading reminds me of how desperately I needed a God to take my problems and manage them for me. Before Al-Anon, my life was one of stress, anxiety, worry, and anger. I always felt like there was not enough time in the day. I felt as though life could not be easier ever, no matter how hard I tried. Today, I know that turning my will over to a God who loves me more than I could ever understand is what is best for me. Many times I have forced my will to match my expectations. When I was 29 years old, I decided that by 30 years old, I should have the car I wanted, a husband, and a home that I would purchase. I set out to make all those things happen. I got into more debt. I purchased a car that I couldn't afford the maintenance on, Mercedes. And I asked my mom to partner and buy a house with me. Now, all I needed was that husband. This would be an easy task, right? The same year, my position at my job was transferred to Pleasanton, California. I was looking for my husband all the time, not really praying for God to show him to me, just using my own eyes. You know, the wise method. 5 months later at my office, I noticed a handsome young man talking to someone in the next cubicle. I saw him from behind as I was walking to my desk and I thought, whoa, immediately my body became warm. And this is before, right now I have hot flashes. That's why I get warm. But then I was just not having hot flashes. So that was like a, oh my gosh, he's so hot, kind of warm. So I felt a whisper in my head and it said, this is your husband. I was like, what? Tripping. Yeah, right. Like this guy, I don't even know who he is. I thought, what in the world is happening, for crying out loud? I just thought he was physically attractive, but really, Lord, this is my husband? Time went on, and somehow he and I would meet during a smoke break amongst mutual friends. We shook hands to say hello, and my life has never been the same. I have religious beliefs, and I need to meet that deadline of being married because I was already 31 years old, and I was really missing my mark. After 100 days, do you guys hear that? 100 days of dating, friendship, and engagement, all that smashed in there. I think it was like 30, 31, 32. We were married. And I'm not sure how all that happened so swiftly and so quickly, but I was excited and slightly in disbelief that it was happening. I thought someone actually wanted to marry me? This is a hoax, can't be real. Like Donald Trump says, fake news, right? Fake news. Someone cannot fall in love with me this quickly unless he's on drugs. Well, sadly he was. He relapsed early on in our relationship and kept it a secret until one day I went searching. I was so tired of it and I confronted him. He admitted it, went to rehab, and the rest of the story is his to tell. Expectations began to set in. My dreams for us were crushed in a million pieces. I had married a man just like my dad. Oh. I had married a total loser for sure, a lowlife. How could I manage this embarrassment? Surely I had to divorce him. This is not what I signed up for, and it's not what I should have to deal with. Just ask my mom. She's like, pro C-Clyde. Go, girl. Let him go. I learned quickly about the Al-Anon family groups after his entry into rehab. Much like it is here locally, they held family nights so that we could hear from various speakers about topics like recovery and support for family members and friends of alcoholics. I was in shock. I could not believe, as I looked around that huge circle, I heard pieces of my life story in everybody's share. I held back my tears. I could not believe where my choices had led me to this dysfunctional circle with these people. I never signed up for this. Surely that whisper that he was my husband was totally from Satan himself, because God would never choose this life for me. Or would he? Or would he? See, the funny thing that I've realized, my friends, is that I am not here to be happy. As a believer in Christ Jesus, who's my higher power, not Al-Anon's, please know that, and a student of the Holy Bible, I recognize that this is not my home. This is a temporary home for me, and my life has been described as nothing more than a vapor. I'm 41 years old now, and I have finally realized that the things that happen in my life are allowed to happen so that my character can be refined. Who would have thought that? I spent all that time in the gym, like making all those beautiful muscles and those collarbones that you can't see anymore because I'm chunky. And what did I do with my character? Nothing. Nothing. So because I learned here that I have a third step opportunity that I can turn over my will every single day and ask my higher power to make my life just as he wants it, I get to have a husband like that. See, I was already asking for him to change me to be a better girl before I met that man. So it turns out that it really looks like I'm supposed to be learning from this man, and I am. I didn't want to be married to an alcoholic with mental illness and addiction issues. Who wants that? A trifecta of that? That is not good. I wanted to forget that whisper that came into my conscious mind. That's not my husband. That isn't my husband. They must have put something in my vanilla latte that day, because I don't even know how that came to my mind. I plan to marry a doctor, a lawyer, a businessman, something to make my family proud. But no, I got this chump because of a whisper. Maybe it was a hallucination. I mean, who knows, right? Well, it turns out that because I had faith and listened to that whisper and went with the flow in that relationship, he became my husband. And through him, I learned about this program and would meet all of you. So perhaps maybe the whisper was from a good place. My next reading is Courage to Change, page 153. An expectation is a premeditated resentment. June 1st, a longtime member says, an expectation is a premeditated resentment. I take this statement to suggest that when I have a resentment, I can look to my expectations for a probable source. Here's an example. I have a brother who is less attentive to being prompt than I am. When I make a plan with him that involves meeting at a certain time, I am cooperating in establishing conditions that encourage me to nurse a resentment. On the other hand, when I make a plan with my brother that is based on no expectation of promptness, I feel no resentment. Today's reminder, I have the right to choose my own standards of conduct, but I do not have the right or the power to impose those standards on others. And the quote from Living with Sobriety is, I have accepted myself and I'm beginning to accept other people the way they are each day. Now I have fewer resentments. You know, I chose this reading because it also applies to me. I'm starting to just accept me. Like, just know, see, Clay, you're not a loser because you didn't marry all these prominent titles that I just read on my paper. You're not a loser because, you know, whatever, whatever. Like, just be. That has been really freeing for me. We will come back to my wedded alcoholic bliss in a little while. Now for the next story. We will talk about Justin today. Remember, I said I was going to use aliases. Let us now take a look at some other expectations that have crushed my heart into a million little pieces. My sister was a high energy, ambitious thrill seeker as a teenager. If you listen to that again, that's the political way to say trouble flipping maker. High energy, ambitious, thrill seeking teenager. She gave my mom all the fun of worry, preoccupation, and stress. One day she came home to tell us that she was pregnant with her first baby. My mom and I could not imagine how a young lady with such a lively existence would be able or capable to take care of a baby. Of course, as a family who was more than dedicated and devoted to help, we were right there to help her with whatever she needed. That little boy became the king of the family. His every move, word, thought was celebrated. There was something special about this beautiful baby boy. He was special. He was divine, and he would bring many unpleasant surprises. Welcome to the family disease of alcoholism. I was always busy with school and work and trying to achieve my next goal. Remember, I like to set deadlines and goals. Car, house, husband, all by 31, right? Remember? Okay. So we just keep going with our little goals and deadlines. And well, because I was so focused on my ambitions, I just decided my sister would need to share her baby with me. Like, I didn't have time to have one. She just needed to share him with me. So she did. Just like we shared clothes and a bedroom growing up, we could share her baby. She said, okay. My sister was happy, more than happy to share her little baby boy with me. He was the first person to call me by my name, Dee Dee. That's my ringtone that I love to hear my baby say. I just made it up. Like, there's a million people in my family, paternal, maternal, like 1,000 Theas. And I was like, my name's already C-Cli. Like, I get to be different. So you're going to call me Dee Dee. And my babies have been calling me Dee Dee for, Justin's going to be 19 years old. So for 19 years, I've been hearing that beautiful name. So he was the first baby who could melt my whole heart when I saw him or I heard him cry. When my sister was in labor, the baby was not receiving the adequate amount of oxygen, and the medical team decided to do an emergency cesarean section just to help save the baby. They wheeled my little sister and baby away. My mom and I headed to the chapel in the hospital. Oh my goodness, I had never been so scared in my whole life. This little boy who I had fed endless bowls of pho and Taco Bell and De Chico's and Armenian food was not going to make it? What are you talking about? What do you mean, God? Is this real? Mom and I remained quiet in prayer on our knees in the chapel for what seemed like an eternity. You guys know how that is when you're like stressed and you don't know what the answers are and you're like, Finally, someone came and shared the news with us that mommy and baby were okay. Oh, what a relief. Oh my goodness, what fear and anguish I felt for the first time in my life. I never have loved a human being like that before. Remember, I didn't have kids, so I don't know what that's like, but that baby, oh, he did something for me. This was a different love. I'd never experienced something so special than I had with that baby boy named Justin. His mother went on to become a law enforcement officer and worked overnight for most of her shifts. So I would help my mom and Justin's dad care for him whenever I could. At the time, I was very busy in college with a part-time job, an internship, and a toxic, off-again, on-again relationship with, you guessed, another alcoholic. I had no idea that I would grow so attached to this little baby. We went on to make so many memories. He spent many nights at Grammy's house, which was also my house. He was my best bud. We spoke of our dreams and what we would accomplish together in life. I had nothing but great, insurmountable expectations for this boy. I knew in my heart he would be the greatest. He was the king of our family, right? What could go wrong? Except for when you have alcoholism in your blood. Alcoholism is a progressive disease. It does not discriminate. it does not select you based on how much money you have, which zip code you live in, which sports team you cheer for. It is irrespective of all of that. It is a progressive, cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. It is an obsession of the mind and a craving in the body. And guess what? It does not skip over the little kings of families. At least in my case, it didn't. Justin turned 16 years old, and ever since I can remember, he's been a car enthusiast. I taught him to dream board since he was a little boy and to always shoot for his dreams, no matter how silly or stupid they sounded to everyone else. I decided in my will, again, not God's will, that I would lease a car for him. See, this is why I have a program, because you see, you guys know my problems, you know, I just do things. Now, again, I did not have much money as I was still building my business, and I did not consult with his parents. Big mistake. I just picked him up one day. We went to the dealership, and I said, "What the heck, my little king? Let's try and get you a car." Sure enough, good old Captain Jack over at frickin' Chrysler made sure we got that car. Well, here we go. Guys, put your seatbelts on. It was a 2018 Dodge Charger with more horsepower than I know what to do with. Probably like four or five of us, our cars combined, okay? One time I drove that car, like, I don't know why I used it. And I went with Natalie, my little niece, and I was like, "Ready?" And I just like went to like 30, and like my whole like body went back. I was like, "Oh my gosh." I thought my little Kia was something. Hilarious. He was the happiest I'd ever seen him. He thanked me infinitely and said he would do anything for me for the rest of my life. I felt really sad inside because I had not discussed this huge decision with his parents. I just felt like doing it, and I did. Some of you also don't know that I struggle with impulse control as well. Addiction and mental illness really runs in my family. And so like, this Justin and I mean, everybody says he's my son because he has all my genetics. And it's just really crazy how I didn't think about anything. I was just like, "Let's go get a new car." And I didn't think of anything. I just wanted to do that. So these are the choices that bring about the most danger in my life, is when I just do what I feel like doing. Because he was already hanging out with a crowd of young people who were thrill seekers, remember, like my sister, that's the nice way of saying probably not the best crowd. Families had the means to do many things. I was worried about Justin. I was not sure that he would be able to handle this responsibility. Yet I'd already leased the car. It was too late. It was a 3-year contract. I was in over my head. We wrote up a contract, he and I, that he would be randomly drug and alcohol tested, and his car was subject to search and seizure at any time. I had it figured out. You know us Al-Anonics, we always have a plan, right? A series of things began to take place. He was working with me during his summer break, and he would often complain, "Titi, I don't think I can go in today. My stomach really hurts. Like, I didn't sleep all night, had really bad dreams." I was like, that's weird. "Okay, mijo, can I get you some Pepto-Bismol, like some Menudo, like, what do you need?" He's like, "No, Titi, I just think I need to stay home." I was like, "Okay, my king, sure." You know, I was just let him do whatever. So I let him stay home. I had no clue at this point, you guys, that he was drinking and using. So I just let it slide several times. I felt an emptiness in the pit of my stomach, indicating to me that there was more to the story. But I just ignored it, and I just trusted the process. One day I had dropped him off at his house after work, and I asked him to open the trunk and the car. And immediately his body language shifted. You know how when something's not right for a person, they know what's coming and like their face goes cold. And you just know, as a human to human, okay, you know what that looks like. Something was terribly wrong. I could see it in his eyes. He immediately sat on the curb. I was like, ooh, that doesn't look good already. Your body language, you're already defeated. Like, I'm thinking in my mind, you know, like you're already preparing for something. So I opened the trunk and I found small bags of marijuana, bongs, etc. My heart broke again into a million little pieces. This king of my world, this star that I had so many aspirations for, this son that I got to share with my sister, had failed me. I broke. I played it cool. I said we would address it when his parents got home because they were at another son's baseball game. I addressed it with his parents and I was advised to take the car. I could not handle keeping the car away for too long because he's my king and I'm an Al-Anon. So I gave it back and then I began testing him. Again, he failed the tests in the areas of alcohol and marijuana. I knew he had a problem, but he always had a stellar story ready, and I took it hook, line, and sinker. After some time of continual dirty tests, I could not take it anymore, and I consulted his stepdad. His stepdad advised me to do the unthinkable, and that was to take the car permanently. He said unless he could get a job and pay for it himself and be clean and sober, he could not have access to the car anymore. I took possession of the car in October of that year, and I gave him 30 days to get a job. He never did. I let him know I would be taking care of the car and that he would have it no longer. He was crushed, and so was I. I went into a depression for several months and barely worked. I could not deal with the truth of who our Justin had become. I felt betrayed and sick to my stomach. I thought, not another one. My next reading is from One Day at a Time, page 298. And my quote theme from that one is, the Serenity Prayer is excellent medicine for discontentment. One evening at a meeting, there seemed to be an unusual number of complaints from members about not having what they felt entitled to, or about the alcoholic's behavior, and generally about their sorry lot in life. One, a forthright person, spoke up. You know, all this sounds as though some of us were childishly expecting life to be entirely free of problems. I recall a long ago radio comedian whose favorite line went something like this. Well, you have to take the bitter with the better. That's pretty good Al-Anon philosophy too, because it tells us we have to accept some unpalatable experiences along the way, never forgetting at the same time to keep an eye on the good things. Today's reminder, am I expecting everything in life to be just the way I want it? Maybe I ought to take a good look at those expectations and see if they are realistic for my particular situation. If I'm constantly reaching for the moon, I'm going to miss a lot of pleasant things right here in my little world. And the quote is, the Serenity Prayer is excellent medicine for discontentment. So good. I love our literature. So the next year he would go on to be involved in a collision while driving his friend's car. He was intoxicated then as well. Several thousands of dollars later, the debt would be repaid, but he lost that friendship for a long time, if not permanently. By this time, he had lost touch with most of his friends due to his behavior and their parents deciding he was not good for their sons. In late 2019, I learned that he had been in an ATV accident with his friend. He came out with minor injuries. His former friend is still in the hospital recovering. Not good. I received information in early 2020 that Justin had been expelled from his school district because he went to school intoxicated and called every administrator every name under the sun and told them where to stick it. This was it. Again, my expectations were thrust into the garbage can. Remember, this is my son, my only son. My sister went on to have three more children, and this is the only one that I connected with as my child. I don't know if it's because he was first. We have similar souls. I really don't know what it is, but I was really heartbreaking for me. As he is resourceful, he went to get his first job, and he was doing well. He was driving his Grammy's car and was cited for intoxication in public. You guys see the main theme here? Does anyone see the main theme? Okay, just checking. I don't know if I was just me, but okay. Months later, he would find another better paying job, and he would devise a plan to get his dream car back into his possession. Yeah, you guys heard it. Charger number two. All he needed was a willing cosigner. He knew I wasn't going to do it. Thank God for this program and a fear of going into bankruptcy. I didn't do it the second time. You guys should be clapping quietly over there. He did find a willing cosigner. He did it again. His parents were furious. I was nervous, but hopeful, and off he went. One day I was taking his sister home from a night at my house, and I said, "Where's Justin's car?" She said, "It was impounded." She only knew that because he likes to go on Snapchat and show everybody his thrill-seeking behavior with the police and everything. His little sister saw. Again, he was under the influence and would receive his first DUI at 18 years old. He had just driven the car off the lot 5 days before. Once his stepdad became aware of this, he was asked to move out since he is 18 years old. With no other plan, his first stop was his Grammy's house, also where I live. I was delighted that my old pal was back, but I was very nervous inside. He did well for the first week. He was home when he was supposed to. He was kind. He was not drinking or getting drunk in his bedroom. What a sigh of relief! Had he gotten better? Did I get another Al-Anon miracle? Was it only the change of scenery that he needed? Oh my goodness! Finally, I could breathe. My king was back, and he had a fighting chance. The day, you guys, hear me out. The day that I said that, I was like, "Oh, it's so wonderful. You're doing so good." He left at 9 p.m. and said he loved us, and he would be back a little bit later. At 4 a.m., I was sleeping soundly, and I was annoyed that someone was tapping my foot. "Really, Mom? Like, you can't do any other body part? Like, why do you have to do that?" So she's tapping my foot, and I heard my mother's voice. It was in distress and breaking as to hold back her flood of tears. Justin had been in a car accident. He is currently with the police. She crumbled as she spoke these words. This would be the night he received his second DUI within weeks of the first one. They handcuffed him and took him to jail. Later that day around noon, he and his girlfriend showed up. He drove his mangled car back home and put it in the garage. He looked at his family. His mother, my mother, and I had all been here because we had a family intervention. His stepdad had just left. The girls were still here. I was getting ready to jump on and secretary the Friday noon meeting. And he shows up. And I just, you guys, he looked at us with such, like, can't describe the look. And he's like, "Take the car, I'm done." And I was like, so sad. But anyway, you know, I have a program. I can't just be trying to help him all the time, whatever. So seeing him come from jail, the mix of emotions in his tears that were welling up in his beautiful big brown eyes, my heart was breaking again. Courage to change. By the way, guys, this just happened this weekend. This is like literal 2 days ago. When I speak, I always talk about current events. So read Courage to Change, page 39. That's where I'm going now. Time is looking good. I'm almost done. Yeah. February 8th. I like people And at one time, I wanted everyone to be my friend. With the best of intentions, I tried to encourage friendships with certain individuals, although my attempts were repeatedly discreetly rebuffed. I was comforted by the words I heard at the close of each Al-Anon meeting. Though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. It was an important lesson that while I can't have everyone's friendship, I can offer and receive respect, support, and understanding. Patience and humility soothe my wounded pride. Today's reminder, it is unrealistic to expect everyone to like me. With such an expectation, I set myself up to fail and give myself an excuse to blame that failure on others. I can't change other people, but I can change my own attitudes. I can let go of my rules about how others should feel about me. When I am disappointed in another's response, I can make an extra effort to be kind, warm, and loving to myself. I am lovable, just the way I am. And the quote here is, to love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance, by Oscar Wilde. I learned that at 41 years old that I can love myself. Incredible. After all this time with you guys, all these meetings, all this service, all these speakers, I just got it this year. Isn't that cool? Now that is an Al-Anon miracle for me. I share the story of Justin's impact on my life because I never thought that I would live to talk about it. If someone told me that this is where his life would be, I would be a walking dead person. Just so you guys know, if I weren't an equalist, like I thought that everybody should be equal, I would leave him everything I ever had. He is that favored. Okay. But I love my other babies as well. And so everybody's going to be split in four. I'm telling you guys that I love this guy so much. Without a doubt, first thought is let him have everything. I don't know if you guys, I mean, some of you are mothers. We're not supposed to have favorites or whatever. I just have a connection with this guy. That's all. Well, the Al-Anonic alcoholic math is, I wonder why I have a connection with him. Ay, ay, ay. He is the first person I've ever loved in such a major way. He is one of the nicest people I know, and he always makes me feel like I'm the most special person in the world after his mother and now his girlfriend, that is. So I'm number three. It's okay. 5 minutes. Good. Okay, good. The tools of this program, the connection I continue to develop with God, is carrying me. I can keep coming back, and I can keep turning my will over to a God who loves me and cares for me more than anything. I no longer have to be afraid. I am not and cannot be Justin's higher power. I cannot tell him what to do or worry about what he will do next. My options are to focus on others. My options are to focus on others and be constantly disappointed because they aren't doing what I think they should be doing, or focus on myself and continue to grow and learn. I choose the latter. I promised we would get back to the story of my wedded alcoholic bliss. Remember? We remained married for almost 4 years on paper. We were never able to get it right. We tried many times. We're so crazy. We even canceled the divorce. And then I went back to the Superior Court before COVID and canceled the cancellation. Welcome to the alcoholic marriage. So dysfunctional. So much chaos, so much pain. How much of it was necessary? When I sit back and think about that relationship, expectation comes to my mind. First word. All my life, I thought I would marry my Prince Charming, a handsome man with several commas and zeros in his bank account and loves God. This is what I thought I would get. Instead, I married and divorced a broken-spirited alcoholic. From 2015 to 2018, I continued to live my life without him. I explored various challenges. I dreamed of him often, and I would plead with God, God, why is this happening? Please just bring him back or take him out of my mind. You already know I have OCD, bro. Why do you keep spinning him? Boom, boom, boom. I want to think about somebody else, you know? In October 2018, I was sitting down just casually looking at my notifications on my phone, and I saw his name in my email. I was like, what? He's been hacked. The guy hates me. He would never write me. Somebody died or he's been hacked. Serious. Like, we were not like those lovey-dovey divorce people. We were like, forever blocked, you know? I thought this man had found his happily ever after in someone else. That's what I heard on the streets. Well, he did have someone else, but he insisted that we talk as friends. I told him, look, you and I both know we're not friends, okay? We are ex-spouses, and I still have feelings for you. And unless you're really bored, it seems like you have something for me too, brother. And I said I would not talk to him unless he became single again. And we spoke a few more times during the following year. In October 2019, he reached out to me, and this time he was single. I said, okay, well, now we can have a different conversation. We talked and talked some more. We met up once, and we decided to get married again. You know, our intensity. You guys know our intensity. Remember last time? We met up one time and decided to get married again. You guys heard that. We were married in early December, and it was nice for a little while. He came to live with me in Fresno in late February 2020. A few weeks later, the entire world would be forced to shelter in place. We quickly became acquainted with each other because we were with each other 24/7. It was okay, and then it wasn't. You see, what I realized is that I was obsessed with this man. And because I yearned for his love, he was all I could focus on. What does that mean for my life? That meant less time with God and less time for learning and reflection. I have principles regarding marriage, and I believe that marriage is for life no matter what. Well, unless there's infidelity, that's stupid. But one afternoon, I decided to tell him that I was no longer happy. It was Friday, July 3rd, 2020. He asked if I was breaking up with him, and I said, well, yes, unless you can change my mind. My husband's very quiet, a man of very few words. He didn't even say anything. He literally like just went, like looked somewhere else, and he was like moving his fingers. He's a fidgety one, and he was like going like this. And then I said, are you going to say anything? And he said, nope, I'm done. And I was like, that's not what I wanted. But anyway, that's what he did. And my husband plays hardball, literally left the next morning, never came back, left his cat. He came to get his stuff, okay? I wasn't here. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see him. He's been gone for over a month now, and the first few days and weeks were brutal. I realized that my expectations of him were all I could focus on. Somehow, because I had taken my eyes off of my time with God, I thought that my husband should and could take his place. That's where I went wrong. I now know what happened, and every day I'm working to make that relationship with God my first priority and to practice the principles of this program and let my husband live his life. We are still married. I ask God that if it is his will, and that he will lead him back to me. However, if he doesn't, I am okay with that too. I recognize my lessons in this so far. I strongly believe in the saying, and I'll paraphrase this. If you love someone, set them free. If they come back, it was meant to be. If they don't, it was never meant for me. Today, I choose to live a life filled with gratitude, meditation, laughter. You guys know laughter. I'm always busting jokes and light. I am excited to take your questions and or experience strength and hope that came to your mind as you listen to this story today. Thank you for allowing me to share your loving support, and may God bless each and every one of you. And I will keep coming back. Thank you very much.